Blog Talk Radio.
Fios is not cable. We're wired differently, which means you can get the fastest internet available with equal upload and download speeds from 50 to 500 megs. So you can upload 200 photos before your favorite song is finished. Click the ad and switch to Fios today to get our best offer ever.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servodidio, and I am your host. I am a licensed clinical social worker, psychotherapist, and I have my own private practice here in Mamaroneck, New York. I work with individuals, couples, and families. My clients are both children, adults, and individuals and couples that experience a variety of issues related to anxiety, depression, PTSD, domestic violence, sexual abuse, trauma, divorce, addiction, and communication and relational skills. I also host my own internet television show, The Alexa Show, which airs Sunday nights at 8 p.m. on AlexaTVShow.com. I also just wrote my first published book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos. You can also find us on Facebook at Facebook.com, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos. My publisher's page is www.ccbpublishing.com/a.html. Insight to Healing has some exciting news. By way of Al Cole from CBS Radio, Insight to Healing will be airing on his channel. Through the success of Al's nationally syndicated show, People of Distinction, Al's talk show, as well as his entire radio network, airs with CBS radio shows on the giant iTunes radio network. Among other talk show clients on Al Cole's radio network is the international actress Dee Wallace. Dee Wallace is the actress who starred in one of the biggest films ever, E.T. It's just so exciting to have Insight into Healing to be expanding onto Al Cole's network. Also, if you have any questions, feel free to send questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. Tonight's guest is Craig Dickinson. He created the group Drug Addicts Against Drugs. They're found on Facebook at facebook.com/drugaddictsagainstdrugs. Being raised in the 60s, Craig knew what smoking weed was and was able to listen to rock and roll music. He played drums in a rock band, and as a teen, it wasn't long before he started smoking weed. Going to high school and getting high was one of his things to do. It wasn't very long before his friends found out what cocaine was. He loved it, and he still loves it. As an addict, you cannot do things that you love. That's how it works. When you love something that is unstoppable and is also non-productive to your life. He also was married young and now raising a family. Having children made his life very pleasant, and although the cocaine stopped for some years, in order to buy nice things, the party never really did end. Moving into the 90s, crack had all taken over the world and the planet, and it wasn't long before he rediscovered cocaine. The train was headed for a wreck, and he was the engineer. Moving closer to where his old friends in the barrooms we frequented in their youth was a recipe for anything other than a wholesome family life with two young children and two teens at home. The scary thing, Craig says, I thought this was completely normal, and I actually deserved it for all the hard work I put in through my years. This tragically ultimately brought us back together to the place where he built his new home. After Hurricane Sandy, his mom passed away, and he saw the motivation to change his ways while his dad was still alive. Craig sought treatment once again throughout the 10 years of prior treatment. This time he was committed. He is happy to say 3 years into his sobriety, his outlook on life is very different, as he sees drugs killing off an entire generation, one that his children live in. The numbers are staggeringly devastating, and his mission now is to share his experiences with parents that don't understand addiction and youngsters who need the truth before addiction takes hold of them. Craig, welcome to Insight into Healing. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
How are you today, Alexis? It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you so much. So let's start from the beginning. How did you begin with all this? I know we started with some of your history. How has it impacted how you are now?
Well, I tell you, I have been involved in addiction most all my life. as you read to the listeners, I started getting high at a very young age. I'm talking 13, which, you know, gets my concerns for what children are doing today. I did play in a rock band, you know, in the 60s. Everybody was getting high, my older brothers, my older sisters. There was a lot of children where I grew up, and everybody wanted to be like their older brothers and sisters. Again, in the 60s, everybody was smoking weed. My high school was literally getting high. That's all we did. We went to school, we got high before we even went to class. And you also read, for me, the scary part was I thought this was completely normal. I did get married at a young age, and I went to work in a television industry. I worked for a television studio in New York, Modern Telecommunications. And in that industry, getting high was, you know, acceptable and completely normal, as we still see it is today, pretty much. And I continued to get high thinking it was completely normal. Scary part was I made a decent living, and I was able to get high, raise a family, pay for my house, pay my bills, and I did quite well all along while getting high. In 2012, which is not too long ago, I lost my home to Superstorm Sandy. My wife and I had been separated on and off for many years, going back to 1998, because of my drug addiction. And after Hurricane Sandy, 1 month after Hurricane Sandy, my mom passed away, which, as anyone would know, we only get one mom, opened my eyes to wishing she would have seen me in a different light, in a sober light. And I made a commitment at that point, while my dad was still alive, that I was going to get sober again. I had tried to get sober for the best part of 10 years after getting high for 30. So I'm involved in this, you know, 40 years. So in 2013, July 4th, 2013, I did go into the hospital. I spent 6 weeks in a hospital basically on a psych ward, detoxing, trying to adjust medications. I've been on antidepressants for many, many years, and still am today. I started Drug Addicts Against Drugs, thinking that I was going to put together a little website where addicts could talk and understand each other, just a forum to go on and schmooze, till I found out that there were thousands of addiction recovery sites out there. And my pages really weren't going anywhere. You know, as an addict, we want everything and we want it now. So my patience was thin. I came home from rehab. I basically spent the next 2 years in my own house, locked in a bedroom with a laptop. And I was being supervised by my wife and children. You know, I basically created my own long-term rehab. And didn't go anywhere by myself for 2 years, knowing that I could literally go around the corner or over the bridge and wind up with the old crew and get high. And I did not want that to happen, and it did in fact work. Because long-term addiction needs long-term recovery. And it's not easy for anyone who's been in long-term addiction to get out of it. Especially
for me. And I think that is such an incredible point that you made, that long-term addiction needs long-term recovery. Just because, you know, you've gone to rehab, it also is a lifestyle change. And I find so many times people do go back to the same place, same people, same environment, and it can be and will be very triggering. So it has to make sure you have all those tools while you're in treatment, and then also while you're back outside, that it's an everyday decision to make sure you have the right support team and the right tools surrounding you.
Key words, right support team. I mean, it's absolutely imperative that you keep yourself busy and that you keep someone else in recovery or someone else you can trust close to you. Keeping busy is a key factor for me. Having too much time on our hands is a recipe for disaster. That is absolutely imperative. And I did stay, you know, again, my wife and I had a rocky relationship for many, many years. And getting back together in a household where I was you know, not welcome at one time. I don't want to say welcome, but I wasn't welcome at one time because of my lifestyle. It wasn't easy. And the only benefit was my house actually wasn't here. We had 2 years building a house after Hurricane Sandy. I spent a lot of time at my sister's house, which is not too far from here. It's a lovely environment, but I was with my wife and my children and nobody else. And the old crowd was basically non-existent anymore. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I lost the last person that I did hang out with for the best part of 20 years, and he got high right until the day he died. Unfortunately, an infection took my dearest friend Joe 2 weeks ago, and although I've been clean for 3 years now, a little over 3 years now, Joe had been getting high for 50 years. He's a little older than me, and even though it wasn't heroin that took him, his whole world basically was revolved around drugs, and it was his ultimate demise. I mean, he had an infection in his body that took him very fast 2 weeks ago, much to my shock and dismay, but I was actually at his bedside when he passed away. So I'm a little rattled still over that. Alexa,
yes.
I have in this group on the internet was something I thought was going to be new and upcoming, and again, I found out there were thousands of recovery sites on the internet, and what I was trying to do was nothing new. What I wound up doing after 3 months of not getting anybody to come on my pages and take off what I thought was going to happen was I kind of changed the forum to looking out for the future up and coming children going to school and doing the same thing I did 40, 50 years ago. The last part of my career, I went back to work for a school district that I grew up in, out in Farmingdale, New York. It's a big district out on Long Island. Working as a maintainer in that school district, I was in the presence of children from basically kindergarten to high school. And I saw kids as young as 7, 8, 9 out in the ball field smoking cigarettes and joking about getting drunk. And I realized, you know something, this is the same exact thing that we did when I was a kid. And if kids this age are being exposed to this type of lifestyle and not being supervised by their parents as such, how long before they're not overdosing on heroin? And you look at the statistics today, we're losing 2 kids every half hour today from heroin, from overdose.
A lot of parents don't think their children are too young. As you were saying, these younger kids, a lot of parents feel their children are too young and shouldn't be exposed, or those discussions shouldn't be brought up. But these kids are doing it at school. Their friends are doing it. They're being exposed to it. Just because you speak to your children doesn't mean you're going to put an idea in their head. That's the farthest thing from what's been going on with this epidemic.
Having 4 children of my own, I realize that everything you teach them in the presence of your house is all well and good until that very day that they go to first grade and they meet every other kid on the block or every other kid in the neighborhood, and you have no clue what they're exposed to in the lunchroom, in the ball field. It absolutely is imperative that we tell our children the truth. I believe that, and I write this on a lot of my pages, if we teach the history of addiction in history classes, we may be able to change history. But until then, we're not going to. And as you know, I'm doing this 3 years now. Nothing's changed. We're still losing 2 kids every half hour. You know, I've gone to protests down in Washington. We walked on the Washington Monument. We had one of the first and biggest rallies was the Unite to Face Addiction rally a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, I think. Well, actually, it was last year. What am I saying? And the government said they're going to do this, and the government said they're going to do that, and they're going to allocate this much money. I don't see anything happening. I don't see anything changing. The biggest change was Patrick Kennedy putting a bill forth in front of the government mandating our insurance companies to cover addiction as an illness. And although supposedly this has gone through, and I really don't even know if it's law, I don't know what stage it's in, But I tell you what, the insurance companies are finding their ways around it. Some of the advocates that I speak with on a daily basis can't believe how the loopholes that they're finding to not treat people who are even covered by insurance. It's a crazy, crazy world we live in. And the younger we teach our children and the truth that we tell them is going to save their lives. And parents, like you said, don't want to believe that a child 6, 7 years old even understands what addiction is, never mind heroin. The fact of the matter is they listen, they see, and they hear everything that goes on around them. My son would say stuff at the dinner table that my wife and I never spoke to him until we realized 2 rooms away while he was watching Sesame Street on the television, he was listening to every word we said while we were in the kitchen. So they are mockingbirds. They do hear and they do see everything around them. And they're never too young to learn the truth. I don't care who your child is or what you're involved in. Your child knows what's going on.
Yes, and I think teaching them at a young age and providing them with the education, the tools, the support networks, and also being able to come to you as a parent and feel comfortable. Yes, it's a very tough topic and you're very vulnerable, but I think to make sure your children have that open dialogue, because if they're not going to you, who knows who they're going to go to? Is it going to be the drug dealer on the corner? Or another child who's in danger? They need to be able to come to you, and I think parents need to work on it.
Absolutely correct. If you don't teach your children about heroin, then the heroin dealer is going to be the one to teach them, and at that point, it's too late. You know, opiates, never mind heroin, opiates in this country are a big focus, and we do have some of the best medical treatments available to man are in this world actually today. I mean, people have the capability of staying alive forever with new hips and new elbows, new knees, and everything that they're putting together. God knows how long our children are going to be healthy, but education is everything, and the history books have to be rewritten. Like we said, they're never too young to learn the truth. And you don't want your... You know, my wife has a funny saying that your children are not your friends, they're your children. But at the same time, as they grow older, you want them to be close to you, and you want them to be able to ask questions. And there's certain things, you know, even sex education. For crying out loud, that's where we come from. And yet we hide it as if it's obscene. And... You know, you don't want your children to see naked pictures, naked bodies. Come on. They're exposed to it anyway, and if they don't learn in their home, then they're going to learn in the streets. And when they learn in the streets, as I did, it's an avenue that they're going to hide from you the next thing you know.
What does your Facebook page, what do you provide for your viewers, for the members of your group? Well, and what type of members? Is it for... all different types of members? Is there an age limit? What would you say?
No. I run a page. I run a group. The group is we're only 2 years old. The group is going on 5,000 members. I have new members joining every day. What we do is we post information. We post resources. Every Monday I put up resources in a different state of the United States. We put up a different state's resources, free resources, state-run facilities for people with no insurance. The 200-plus groups that I'm involved in share information, share resources, new treatments, new resources. We just share stuff back and forth. I'm trying to put together a program amongst the other advocates I associate with for children. What's been very, very difficult for me to walk into a school district and say, I would like to speak to your children about drug addiction. I'm a drug addict. The last person they want to let into their school building is me, never mind a terrorist with a bomb or a pistol on their back. So unless you come from a well-known group, like we have Steered Straight, a dear friend of ours is Michael DeLeon. He's made a movie. He's traveling the country. He's had a similar life as my own of addiction. His mother was taken His life has changed, and he goes into schools with a program that's recognized. I don't have a recognized program. I do travel the country. I do speak with other advocates at certain functions. I'm trying to put together a program that we can get into the hands of PTAs, scout groups, that they can teach their own students, their own children, without needing me to go into a school building. Because at least in New York, they are not going to let anybody come in and speak to their students. And for me, trying to teach a teenager to get off drugs is just not going to happen. You can't talk a drunk out of being drunk. You can't talk a person who's already high out of being high until maybe the following Sunday when they're coming down over coffee. But when teenagers are already getting high and they're already overdosing, it's very almost impossible to get them out of it. As we know, the drug treatments today, the rehabs today, are all being re-looked at. The biggest facilities, the biggest program we have right now is a 12-step program that we're all familiar with. AA and NA is great for the people who work it. It didn't work for me. I went to AA groups. They looked down at me because of my addiction. Well, meanwhile, where I live, most of the people in AA are hiding an addiction. People that go to the bars are doing cocaine all through the 80s and 90s, but yet they went to AA to hide their addiction, and they have a lot of camaraderie there. But when it came to addicts, we were, quite frankly, we weren't welcome. So NA started, and this goes back many years. NA is a great program. You have NA, you have Cocaine Anonymous, Heroin Anonymous. There's all different programs out there where when you feel the urge to get high, you can pick up a phone, call your sponsor if you have that strength, or you can go to a meeting to keep yourself busy instead of going out and getting high. There's meetings all over. New York is very, very populated. There's meetings everywhere. My problem was going to a meeting and seeing the people I got high with, meeting the same people I met on the streets, wondering if they're sincere, listening to stories, finding new ways to get high, finding new places to get drugs, and it became a trigger for me. It was actually the worst. I went through 10 years of different programs, different rehabs, and different meetings trying to find sobriety, and was unable to until I saw the light this last round in 2012. Not only did my mom pass away, when I went to a hospital, I was housed with children younger than my own children, and realized, as they joked over cigarettes and over coffee, about coming back and getting high together, even though they're in a facility now, still joking about, what are we going to do? When we get out of here, call me. I'll hook you up. And I knew that most of those kids would be back, as I, in the rehab facility over and over again, and some of them wouldn't make it. Well, coincidentally, I was in October, November, December, January, February. 4 months later, the kid who grew up next door to me and went to school with my own children overdosed in the bathroom of a McDonald's right here in Hempstead. And I saw the light, that this is never, ever going to change unless we change how children are raised, how children see addiction, the truth they learn about addiction, and they have to be exposed to the fact that they're going to die at a very, very young age. I'm talking 6 years old, first, second, and third grade. Now, most parents will tell you, if they're raising their first child, that I'm out of my mind, you're not going to teach my child that. Hell no, that's up to me to teach him. Well, yeah, it is up to you to teach him.
It might be too late by the time the parents think it's an appropriate age.
Absolutely, and that is what's going on today. That's exactly what's going on today. And again, when you have somebody who's already getting high, a teenager who's already smoking pot, try to tell them that it's no good for them. And, it's not working. An 18-year-old kid is the smartest person in the world, in their own mind.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not going to change until it's, again, possibly too late.
I think you brought up a really incredible point about the rehab and about the meetings, because I've heard this a lot from clients and from other listeners, that a lot of the people that go to the meetings that are in rehab, it's almost kind of a networking environment for those that still want to use afterwards, or maybe they're just going to get out of going jail time, or they're going to, you know, so their parents will lay off of them for a while, but they're actually networking. So I think as professionals, as public, as parents, as providers, people really need to be aware on who's hanging around outside, because I've heard a lot of times a lot of the dealers know to hang outside the clinics or the mental health or the addiction places, because they know they have their customers coming right there, and it's so easy to trigger somebody to come back in. I think as a community, as a whole, we really need to work together.
Many, many of the sober houses, and there's a vast network of them down south all through Florida, that have been showing up in the news and in the media that we share on the internet. The internet is a great way of free advertising. It's a great way of resources over the media that we see on TV that we all know is controlled by the government. The media only tells us what they want us to know. Whereas the internet, we have, up till today, up till recently, we have a lot of our own access that's uncensored, but that's all changing also. Because I'm really curious what they're allowing us to say to each other, even over the internet. We're supposed to be, you know, we have free reign, but I think there's a lot of censorship going on here too. You know, who's looking at, who's controlling, who's controlling all of these network of sober homes and rehabs that are running rampant on insurance companies' money that we pay for, and now that the government supposedly is going to mandate the insurance companies to treat addiction as an illness, where, I mean, quite frankly, it still is a crime in many places to get caught with drugs in your pocket. They're not going to put you in a hospital and say, oh my goodness, you're sick, because they find you with a couple of bags of dope in your pocket. You're going to jail. I don't know any state in this country that's not going to lock you up for having three bags of dope in your pocket. I was fortunate enough to steer away from heroin because it controlled too many of my friends, and I saw the sickness. Listen, I laid in bed with friends of mine while they kicked for 3 days, fed them, wiped their rear ends, and picked up their vomit while they kicked for 3 days, and it wasn't 2 weeks later when they were back on it again. And I knew that I'm addicted to everything I do, whether it's work, play, or being on this internet with you guys, and I would not let that control me, and was fortunate enough to steer away. 30 of my friends have gone in the last 10 years. The last one went 2 weeks ago. And basically, I don't have any friends involved in addiction anymore that are doing heroin. None of them made it. Not one. You don't see any retired drug dealers living in mansions. They're either dead or they're in jail. The network of rehabs we have today has to be revamped. They're seeing spectacular changes in the medical industry because we have now SPECT scanning. They're doing brain imaging. They're realizing something's going on. When you induce these narcotics into your brain, we all know it's a trigger for dopamine. Our brain has one job. Our brain's only job is our survival. When we induce a narcotic into our body, that changes our brain's priority. Now our survival instinct, the only thing keeping us alive, has changed to think you can only survive with that narcotic in your brain. And this is, you know, this is what's taking every addict who's doing cocaine, heroin, crystal meth, I'm talking major narcotics. I can't really comment on marijuana because I stopped smoking it in 94. I did smoke it for 26 years every day. And I thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I stopped smoking it when I took a civil service job because I was afraid they'd find it in my system. And today they're finding, you know, medical uses for it, which is, it's a catch-22. It may be a natural herb coming from the ground that can stop cancer cells. I don't know. I'm not qualified to diagnose it. I'm not qualified to tell you over the radio right now. Yeah. But there is speculation we're missing out on medicinal qualities. I'm sorry?
Sorry to interrupt. We're just at the end of the show, and I wanted to make sure I say your Facebook page again. It's facebook.com/drugaddictsagainstdrugs. And again, I wanted to thank you so much for joining us tonight, and also thank all my listeners for tuning in. If anyone has any questions, comments, or updates, you can send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. Craig, again, thank you so much for joining us this evening.